again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago just before the glorious holiday of Christmas. I look to my right, lo and behold, it's the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
Your mood is considerably uplifted, I got to say.
Absolutely. It's considerably well, two-game winning streaks. We'll do that to you.
Yeah, right? I guess so. And, you know, the Cavs theoretically are a good team. So also there's that, right? Like, it wasn't like we beat a bottom feeder. It's a little frustrating that we, what was it? We went 2-6 in 8 games. Sorry, 2-6 in 8 games, I think it was, against like the worst like 5 teams in the NBA.
That is correct. That is more than a little frustrating.
And it, you know, it's like if they had played well over that stretch and like you would have expected them to win like 6 of 8. You know, if you had 4 more wins right now than you do, you know, you'd be feeling pretty good. If you were sitting at 16-11, you'd actually be tied with Boston for the 4th seed. So, you know, that was a really, really depressing period. And I'm not sure if I'm happier that we're coming out of it or if I would just rather have us lost these last 2 games and accelerate the idea that this roster is not what we should stick with. But now I'm a little nervous that we're back on track for like 39 wins in a 10th spot and losing in the play-in and not getting one of these really high picks and just like on the treadmill of like sub-mediocrity. Like people were really frustrated when the Bulls under Paxton and Foreman were on the treadmill of like just first-round exits. Like this is the treadmill of like not even first-round exits. It's like so bad. There's like nothing more depressing than that. So that... I'm a little nervous that we're back on that path now. Like I just, you know, it's like you just want them to either be good enough to be in the playoffs or like get some real draft assets and actually, you know, for a team that says they're not taking shortcuts, it's like all they're trying to do is take shortcuts.
Oh, well said, Doug. I mean, that's where the frustration lies here. I don't know how anyone could be happy, you know, really, really, truly happy with this because, you know, the last 2 games, we kind of saw a little bit of what we saw early in the season, a team that's really deep and getting contributions, you know, from 1 through 11. But you can't erase the stain of the 7-game losing streak. The team died there. I mean, you look at the teams they lost to in that stretch. The Pelicans, the Hornets, the Pacers, the Magic are a good team. The Nets, the Pacers, the Warriors. Like, all those teams, with the exception of the Magic, and even the Magic are only a few games over 500. It's like, how do you lose to those teams consistently like that? And some people will say, well, yeah, you know, we're missing Okoro. And I agree, Okoro was a big loss. He's a role.
No one was saying
player.
That outside of you, I believe. I think you're the only one. You're the only one who would be like, well, you know, we were missing Isaac Okoro. He is the key to the Bulls season. And, you know, like everyone makes fun of you about Okoro, but he makes a huge difference, right? Like it's not that he's a superstar player, but he has a really unique skill relative to the people on this team, and we really miss it when that skill is gone.
No doubt. A really wise man once told me there's nothing more underrated than a really good point of attack defender.
Was this you talking to yourself?
Yeah, I was talking to myself.
You're just pontificating.
You actually got it right.
See Red Fred
Land.
I was like, you know what, Fred? There's nothing more underrated than a good point of attack defender.
That's exactly how it went down. I was shaving in the mirror and I started talking to myself.
I love envisioning it that way.
But a couple of my, you know, coaches, like, I still remember that I played for, or, you know, even coaches I coached with and high school coaches I respect really brought this up is this like guys that just do one role and that's guard the opposition's best player. They're not going to score a lot, but there's so much value in that. And if you don't have that and you're just, and this was the point I was just talking to a coach I respect about this. When you're just allowing straight line drive after straight line drive and you have a poor front court D, that front court D gets frustrated. I don't know how anybody can watch Vooch during that 7-game losing streak and look and say he's a completely different player than we saw before. And I think a lot of it had to do with his frustration at, you know, just continually guys coming and attacking what he's not good at, you know. So I noticed they brought up my question on the Bulls CHGO show yesterday where I brought up the point that the Bulls are now 11-8 in games that Okoro has played and 1-7 in games that he's missed, with the one victory being against the Wizards by 1 at home. And Matt Peck brought up, well, there were other guys missing, you know, trying to downplay the excellent point I made. And I love Matt, but I went and did a little bit of deep dive of some of the key players on the team and their stats during that stretch. Like who would you say are the 3 most important players then outside of that?
The 3 most important
on the team.
Players
on the
just
team.
In general?
Yeah, just for the Bulls' success, who would you say?
You know, I'd say Josh Giddey.
All right, let's stop there. Good answer. Okay. You know what his numbers were during that 7-game stretch?
I don't know. I bet you're going to tell me, though.
50% from the field, 41% from three, 71% from the free throw line. So that was down a little bit. 6 free throw attempts per game. He averaged 20 points per game, 7 assists, and 8.4 rebounds per game.
So he played great.
Played well.
Played really great.
Played great.
Yeah, I mean, that's great numbers, right? Yeah, efficient.
Yeah.
High scoring. Did everything. Okay, great numbers.
Were you shocked by that? I was. I thought it
was. I watched the games. I remember Giddey playing pretty well in the games. Like, I didn't think that Giddey was playing bad in the games. So, so I'm not shocked.
He's been freaking great this year,
by the way. Yeah, he has been very good this year. And saying that he's shooting 40% from three, yeah, that's just crazy. Crazy. Nearly five attempts a game.
Yeah, and then so Vooch, the other key guy.
I do not think Vooch is a key guy. Vooch sucks. There's okay. No part of me that would ever put him in the Bulls' most three important players.
Well, I thought you were the guy who threw the stat out at me last episode that the Bulls kind of go the way Vooch goes.
They do. Earlier in the year, they were doing that. But the way Vooch goes is like so. Yeah, anyway, whatever. Go on. Yeah, I agree. Earlier in the year, like, Vooch playing really well definitely juiced results.
Okay, so his numbers during that 7-game losing streak, 30 minutes per game, 43% from the field, 29.6% from three. And this is something I, you know, hammer on consistently, is almost all his value is as a stretch five. And it was non-existent during those 7 games. 10 total free throw attempts in those 6 games. Let me just clarify this for everyone. He missed one of the 7 losses in the 7-game losing streak. So this is over 6 games. He had 10 total free throw attempts over 6 games, 0 blocks over 6 games, 9 rebounds per game, only 6.5 defensive rebounds in 30 minutes, which is kind of low for him. So he sucked. Modest. Do you think he played better or worse during that
stretch? I mean, he played worse, I think.
46%, 25% from three, 73% from the free throw line, 6 rebounds per game, 2 assists, just a complete disaster defensively. So I just highlighted this to like say, yeah, you know, I think two of those guys, specifically Vooch and Modest, really struggled on the defensive end because of his absence, and that's why they played a little bit better. One more player I did want to throw out there is P. Will, and this great opportunity for him to take over since Okoro's out. He played 20 minutes per game. He shot 26% from the field. End of story. The guy is dead to me.
P won't. What say you? Stand still. P will. What are we going with?
Stand still. P will. P won't. All of them combined. P won't. Stand still. P will is probably his new name. Full name. He played 5 minutes last night. Doug, are you aware of that?
Well, we won.
You
right? Aware of that? That makes sense.
4 point. Actually, he played under 5 minutes. He played 4 minutes and 53 seconds after playing 10 minutes last game. Any comments?
So between no, I have no comments. P will sucks. I would say. You know, if you go back to your earlier question, like who are the three most important guys, you know, you said Josh Giddey, and then you didn't let me answer the rest of it because you knew there was no way I was going to pick Nikola Vucevic or Modest Buzelic.
That's correct.
It's like the next three guys. So you're like, I'm going to now like cut you off and I'm going to name who the other two guys I want to harp on are because, it's not the two guys you would pick because Coby White, you know, like if I had to name, if I was not counting Okoro who is out, I would say probably Josh Giddey, Coby White, and Ayodesumu or Trey Jones, but probably Ayodesumu this year would be like the three most important guys on the team.
Okay. Interesting. In terms of impacting winning
for
the Chicago Bulls, do you really feel like, let's say, Ayo is more important than Vooch?
Yeah.
So, you know, Dave always says this, and I kind of agree with him to a certain extent. Like, no one's more impactful on wins than Vooch. Do you agree with that assessment?
The Bulls' record tends to go in the way Vooch plays, but Vooch sucks ass, and that is why we are a terrible team. And so in the sense that, like, if a player who is really bad has a good shooting night, it makes a big difference. Yes, that is true. But that is not a, like, recipe of, like, because when you say important, then it implies, like, Vooch is really good. And what you're really saying is if a really bad player has a great night and we're going to play him 30 minutes a game at least, no matter what happens, whether he's good or bad, but he's consistently bad and then he has a good night, we have a much better chance to win. Yeah. But then qualifying that as important is like a really poor choice in words. And it tends to obfuscate what's really going on, which is that when you get a good game out of a guy you shouldn't be playing, but you're going to play him anyway because you're too scared to bench him for no reason whatsoever. like, then when he actually plays well, you do better. Like, yeah, because you don't have a turd playing 30 minutes, but you know, 70% of the time you have a turd playing 30 minutes, and that's just what it is. So yeah, I don't know if that makes sense to you.
It does. I would counter, you know, Big Dave by saying no one's more impactful in losses than Vooch. So it's like a two-sided coin to me. Like, his defense is so horrific when he's playing and shooting horrible from three on the offensive end. He's a complete detriment to the team. I do find value in Buchan when he's hitting threes. He's a big, bigs are assigned to him, and he's a good pick setter, not horrible in roles. But like, to me, that's where all his value is, when he's hitting at a 40% rate from three. Defensively, he is what he is. He's 35. He's old. He never was good. Now it's fading quickly. So, and I do feel like a lot of his points are like really kind of made due to the greatness of others, especially Giddey. I don't, every game there's got to be like 6 points or 4 points he gets just from beautiful drives and drop offs or easy putbacks, because you know there's four or five guys that are on other players. You know what I mean? So
I think that's
I've always felt that about him.
I would counter a little bit in Vooch's defense here that's probably true of a lot of centers. Like that's a lot of how centers score, right? Like that's kind of expected. And then he does have a high skill level to actually convert those, right? Like a lot of centers aren't always going to, like, you wouldn't trust Andre Drummond to actually catch a pass and then like score with it, right? There's something there that, you know, Vooch does. And I kind of ripped on Vooch a lot there, but I don't mean to harp on him. Like you just said it, he's a 35-year-old guy at the tail end of his career on the last year of a contract we knew was bad when we signed it. Like, this isn't Vooch's fault. This is like, you could use Vooch in a way that's like kind of useful, but we don't, because the coach is too scared to bench him. And I don't know if you saw that quote, like Vooch said, like, hey, you know, you can cut my minutes to play Zach Collins more and Jalen Smith more, and experiment with that more. Like, even so, like, I can't even blame Vooch for like being whiny or pouty about it. He's even going in and saying you could do this. So like, you know, it's like, I don't think Vooch is very good, but like, the problem is not really Vooch. The problem is that we are playing him and treat him like he's an all-star. And it seems even more clear that this is really on Donovan, that he keeps doing this. I've always put it on Donovan, but I thought maybe he was going to lose the locker room. But like, Vooch even having to go and tell him, like, it's okay, like, that you play these guys who are better than me, more than me. Like, you know, and...
Well, but in fairness to Donovan, though, Doug, he did do that against the Charlotte game a few games ago. Vooch didn't play it in the entire fourth quarter. He only played 21 minutes, and he went with Zach Collins.
What happened in that victory game, Fred?
The Bulls won.
Yeah, where were they when they decided to bench Vooch? They were down by 13. So, so, yeah, this is on Donovan. You're saying, like, oh, well, finally figured this out 5 years later. Like, well, congratulations, big guy. Like, I don't know what to say to that. You know, I know you're going to, like, just rip on me for bringing this up. And so I'm going to bring it up anyway. And I'm prepared. You know who's okay, number one in on-off on the Bulls this year, without guessing?
Please don't even bring up this on-off nonsense again. I would guess it's probably...
Just guess. It doesn't matter.
Josh Giddey?
No.
Josh Giddey?
No.
Patrick Williams?
No. Uh-huh. Zach Collins.
Zach Collins. Oh, yeah. I love Zach Collins.
Yeah, no.
Of course. I believe that. He's a good interior defender.
Of guys who are not fringe players. So Dalen Terry and Julian Phillips are actually number two and number three, but they don't play a lot of minutes. You know who is number... The next guy after those guys who actually plays minutes?
Who?
Jalen Smith.
Okay.
So the Bulls, the number one and number two guys of players who actually play, and like, the Bulls do better when they're on their floor, are the two centers who are not Nikola Vucevic. Like, if you go look up every year that Vooch has been on this team, every single center on the roster, every single year that Vooch has been here, has had a better on-off than him. And he is, like, his average is second worst on the team of guys who play rotation minutes over his, like, 5 years here. And so, like, I'm not a big believer in on-off. Like, you know, like, I make fun of you for it all the time. But where it has some value is when you look at it over, like, really long stretches. You cannot be worse than every other single player who's played your position, the vast majority of whom are vet minimum players, like who are not good, and for like 5 years. And you cannot be like singularly the worst guy in your team every single year, like one of the worst two guys. And not be like, hey, you know what? Maybe just over 5 years, we should just try something a little different. Like, of all the things you have tried in the last 5 years, like you couldn't just be like, wow, there's this really big, obvious problem. And so I'm using these numbers, but it's like obvious he can't defend. It's obvious he causes these issues. Like, in 5 years, you've not said, you know what? Maybe we should just try bringing Vooch off the bench for a little bit of time. Just see what happens. Like, couldn't come to that conclusion at any point over 5 years, despite overwhelming evidence that it would be a good thing to try. Like, it's crazy. Anyway, I feel bad. Cause like I said, Vooch is not, I don't actually have a problem with Vooch. He's just, like I said, he's a 35-year-old dude at the end of his contract. The problem is Donovan, like, in the way he treats him. And if he treats Vooch like a son, and if he treated him like every other player on the team and benched him when he was playing bad, and benched him when he made defensive mistakes, and benched him when he was just doing dumb stuff, then it would be fine. But he like won't do that, and he hasn't done that for years. And so like that's the problem. It's a Donovan problem. It's like a Donovan problem. Just who just has blinders for this dude who just plays him like he's so much better than he is, and that is a huge problem.
Regarding the on-off, I've had this discussion probably about 50 times in the last couple weeks, because and one of them was with a high school coach too that was talking about he doesn't like looking at on off, and I agree.
No, it's terrible. It's a terrible stat, especially the worst thing about it is the best way you can use it is the way I just used it, where you are looking at the course of years of data and you're comparing positions, and the way everyone uses it is like, oh, single game. Well, he was this in this game. Yeah, like, well, does that have anything to do with anything? Like, you could just be on the floor and, like, Steph Curry hit 4 threes and now you're on off's terrible. Like, and you weren't guarding Steph Curry and you had nothing to do with Steph Curry, but you get penalized for it. Like, a single game, it's a completely worthless metric. And that's, like, 95% of its usage in the basketball world is people on Twitter quoting, like, on-off numbers for one game.
I'm getting more at the fact of, like, you know, Vooch's, in fairness to him, His on-off numbers would be significantly better if he was coming off the bench. You know who had the best on-off numbers in the league? The best players in the league. Denver, when Jokic is on the court, their on numbers are incredible. When he's off, they're terrible. Well, guess what? The counter is also true. In Okoro's case, he's only on the court when the best player on the opposition is on the court.
You know who has the third best on-off? Like, of meaningful players?
The players actually have numbers. Kobe Jones.
Okay, you know who has the fourth best on-off? Josh Giddey. You know who has the fifth best on-off? Modest Buzelis. You know who's after that? It's Trey Jones. All those guys are positive. And so those are all the guys who started. You know who is suspiciously missing? Like, the only starter who has like a negative on-off that's significantly negative all as well? Nikola Vucevic. So you can't just say, well, he's going up against the best players or whatever. Like, every other person in the starting lineup has got like a good number except for him. So it's him. Like, and that's like another way you look at this is it's like, all right, well, all the guys he regularly plays with have a good number. And so their number is completely juiced when in the very few minutes where he's not on the floor with them.
Yeah.
Like, so that's another good way to look at it. When you look at like, all right, we got five guys who typically play together and one of them has a radically different number than the other five. Like, that's really damning on that guy. Like, the other guys are all, like, you know, in the same situation. As soon as they just replace this one dude, everything's way better. And again, like, so, I apologize again to Vooch because he's 35. He's, like, at the end of his career. Like, it's fine. You know, like, Donovan just needs to be better about recognizing who he is and where he is right now. And you know, he hasn't been. And whatever, I don't care because at this point, I'm like, just lose a shit ton of games. Like, give me a draft pick. Like, I would rather have that anyway. So maybe just play Vooch 40 minutes a game. Just keep playing, throwing him out there. Like, hope he doesn't get hurt if we try that. But, you know, like, it's fine. Do we want to go into the trade you sent me?
Oh, I got it right here. So this is from Kevin Grabowski, a listener. Really appreciate you sending this. And everybody, we get a ton of, I get a ton of emails, and most of them I just answer myself, you know, not bringing up on the show. But we will have a mailbag show, I think, over the holidays at some point. So, hey, Doug and Fred, here's a three-part trade scenario, all meant to be pulled off together. All trades have been checked with Real GM, Sports Track. First, trade Patrick Williams to Portland for Scoot Henderson and Robert Williams III. In this trade, the Bulls also give back the Portland pick currently owed to the Bulls. Bulls give up the pick and get a flyer on a young prospect in Henderson. Scoot is signed for one additional year at $13 million in 26-27. Robert Williams III is an expiring deal. The main motivation here is getting out from under Williams' contract, and the Bulls returning for the Portland pick is a sweetener for them. Note the pick will otherwise convert to a second-round pick if Portland continues to be in the lottery. Portland's motivation is having control of their picks back. This is huge, as they can't currently make trades using picks with the conditional pick being out there. Scoot had been injured and ineffective so far, not too much to give up. Comments on that one?
No way in hell Portland does that, right? Like, just no way in hell. Like, one, I get that Scoot hasn't, like, lit the world on fire, but he improved a lot from one year one to year two, and there's no part of me that feels like Portland is ready to give up on him. Like, I still think they view Scoot as an asset. Secondly, you're asking him to take on an absolute total albatross for a draft pick that is likely going to end up being a second rounder. Like, just even if you just remove Scoot from this trade, like, I can't see them doing that. They have other ways they can get around that, like, that pick motivation if they want to. Like, they could just acquire the worst first rounder in the league, and then now they own one, and then they can now do trades. They can also still, like, make a pick and then trade it after they make it, so they can still do trades around the draft. They just can't really do them at the deadline. So I just think they have, like, way cheaper and easier options to, like, get their flexibility of trading picks back if they really want to. And plus, Portland is not, like, that good. Like, they're 10th, they're 11-16. Like, I don't know that Portland is in the mode where they're like, you know what we should do is trade our first rounders to bring in talent right now. So, like, I'm not sure, like, while it is, like, theoretically limiting to them, there's just easier ways to get around it, and I just don't think they would do that.
I agree with you, too. And Patrick Williams is at the point now, too. Like, that is a major albatross. Why would you want that guy on your roster? So, agree that it's a big zero. Second, Bulls trade Coby White for Dante DiVincenzo and Joan Berenger. How do you spell it? I don't know how to pronounce his name. I call it Joan. Bulls move on from Coby White, having to pay him on his next deal. DiVincenzo is established an effective veteran player that is signed for 12.5 in 26-27. Berenger is an intriguing center prospect signed through 28-29. No picks are exchanged. Minnesota has most of their draft capital pending and unavailable to trade, leaving them with a few options to upgrade at the point guard position. The cost is primarily the asset of Berenger and his potential. Rob Dillingham has generally been included instead of Berenger in post-mock trades, but I don't think I would do that. Berenger is a better prospect. Interesting question, since there is some actual confirmed speculation that Minnesota wants Coby White. What do you say about this offer?
I think this one is really interesting to me. You know, like, this is the type of trade I could totally see doing, because Berenger feels like a prospect that would be valuable for you. And I agree with the take here. So it really comes down to whether or not we would consider moving on from Coby White, or whether we are like, we want to keep Coby White and he's part of our core and build with him next year, and we're willing to take the risk of what his next contract is. I think this is an interesting trade, and I think it could definitely go down exactly how it's been stated. Like, I could see why both sides would maybe consider doing this move. At the same time, you know, like, you just got to point out, like, right now Berenger is playing 4 minutes a game, doing absolutely nothing. I don't know much about him as a prospect. Yeah, just reading about other people's take on him, like, people feel he has some upside here. I'm not sure if that's, like, enough upside for us to be excited, but I could see where if you made the decision, like, hey, let's move on from Coby White, and you just go and figure out, like, who would be interested in Coby White and what's the most you could get for him. Feel like maybe I would aim for something where I'm just getting draft picks back rather than Berenger, given, like, that he's done absolutely nothing so far this year. But I think it's interesting. Like, I think it's just, like, if you made the decision to move on from Coby, you would make a trade kind of like this, you know, like, and whether this is the best thing you could find, I think you would make a trade kind of like this. I would look for something a little better, but I could see how this, if you can't find something else, you would take this if you're the Bulls.
I agree to a certain extent. Like, I feel like Dillingham has to be included. It's got to be Dillingham and Behringer. Because, like, Dillingham's done nothing, too. He's a complete zero so far. He hasn't been able to help that team in any form or fashion. Like, you're giving up Coby White. And I know, like, some people are like, well, this has been a really rough year. And to me, I watch every game. Coby White is nowhere near healthy. All you got to do is watch 5 minutes from his play in March and 5 minutes this year. I mean, the numbers are pretty good in most aspects in terms of like points per game, just the counting stat numbers. He's still getting to the line a ton. But overall, he's not moving anywhere near like he was. And that will happen when you have two bad calves. It's just like, it's not a good injury. And, you know, he just doesn't appear well to me. I did want to point, some people were curious about, you know, what were his numbers in that 7-game losing streak. He only played 4 games, first of all, so he missed 3 of them in that losing streak. And in those 4 games, he averaged 20 points. He got to the line on an average of 8 times per game. Now, what was suffering significantly was his 3-point percentage, and it has not been good this year. I think he's shooting – I'm not sure what Kobe's at for the year. Oh, my gosh, he's at 28% for the year from three. Is that right? Holy cow, that's horrific. That's horrific. But
it's gone unnoticed because he's gotten to the line so much.
You know, yes.
He's found other ways to score, which is actually, I think, like a positive, because you feel comfortable that Coby White's shooting is just like, you feel comfortable he's a much better shooter than what his percentage is this year. Like, he's put up tons and tons of shots over a long point of his career. Like, he's a super high volume shooter. He takes difficult shots, not just easy shots, and he's still always had a stable percentage. So I tend to agree this is either due to the injury or just a bad streak. But I still feel confident, like, when Coby White shoots, whether he's shooting well this year or not.
Agreed. And he doesn't have so many attempts that, you know, 3 or 4 good games in a row, which I know are going to happen. He'll be right back to where he is, his career numbers are. One number that's up significantly on his career numbers, despite generally playing less minutes, is his assists. That's another area. He's averaging over 5 assists. I thought he looked really well in facilitating for others and passing. Anyhow,
can I interrupt you?
This whole deal.
Can I interrupt you to make a really terrible joke?
Sure.
You said Coby White's playing with 2 bad calves. And I'm like, 2 bad calves would be a great name for a podcast that could star Lonzo Ball and Larry Nance Jr. 2 bad calves. All right. I'll be here all week. Be sure to tip your waitress.
Lonzo, very well done. Your comments on Lonzo that you've seen him last game, you know he's shooting like under 30% on the year.
It's terrible.
I feel horrible.
I don't.
I mean, I knew he wasn't that.
Yeah,
good,
no, it's fine. Like,
didn't expect this.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Like, I root for Lonzo, you know, like in a sense of he seems like a good dude. He's gone through a lot. It's been hard. You know, I wish he was playing it at this high level, but like, I just roll my eyes so much when people bring up like, oh, Lonzo Ball is doing like all this great stuff. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm not watching every Cavs game, so like, I can't tell you if Lonzo Ball's just completely killing it more than his numbers are, but his numbers suggest he should not be in the NBA. Like, they're so bad. And I get that he's going to make a highlight pass every now and then. But man, like, I don't know. I've just stopped talking about it on Twitter because like, it's just like, okay.
People get mad.
Like, yeah, like,
yeah, but you're right. There's this whole contingent. Like I always say, the reality is far, or the story is far better than the reality.
Yeah.
You know, people are just celebrating every great. He is a high IQ, insane IQ. He's shooting under 30%. I don't know what to tell you. That's horrific on high, pretty relatively high volume. He's played a lot. It's like, and not only that, he's not finishing. Like, he had a couple of plays in the first game. I was like, you're at the rim, dude. Just throw it up. And he's, you know, kicking it out, whatever.
He is too.
8 assists yesterday, though.
He's not too. Bad. He's like too. You can just see he looks very mechanical, like when he moves. Like his leg just isn't the same. Like just is what it is. Like it just, he does not have the athleticism to make use of his tremendous talents anymore. And that's just what it is. So, you know, it's a bummer. I wish that wasn't the case. Like I really wish it wasn't the case when he was with the Bulls, but it is the case. And, you know, that's just a sad reality. You know, like I also wish Derrick Rose didn't tear an ACL and had like an amazing career for the Bulls, much more so than I wish Lonzo, but you know, like sometimes these things happen and it impacts what the guy can do on the floor. And that's a bummer for them and a bummer for us and whatever team they're on. But this is what it is.
Great. Now, the last suggested trade in this great email from Kevin Grabowski is Bulls trade Vucevic and Phillips for Kuminga. Bulls include two first-round picks, 27 top-five protected and 29 top-three protected. Another flyer on a young player in Kuminga. Vooch is not much to get in return for the Warriors, hence the inclusion of draft capital. I'm not sold this has to happen. Just could let Vooch expire. This leaves the Bulls potentially $45.6 million under the cap going this summer with Io, Herter, Collins, Terry, Carter, and Robert Williams III all expiring. If Kuminga is not desirable, you don't want to spend draft capital, let Vooch walk, and head into the summer with all your draft picks and $68 million under cap. Well, let me just stop right here. I'm going to say right away, I am 100% against trading for Kuminga and giving up one iota of draft capital. Kuminga is already, again, another proved a disappointing year. And, you know, Vooch sucks, understood, but, you know, I think Golden State could talk themselves into a desperate move to get Vooch. I think he was of interest last year, and you could maybe, you know, they're desperate for something. What say you?
Yeah, I'm with you in that there's no way in hell I give up anything for Kuminga. I mean, Kuminga, I get why people are excited that maybe he's like the next Josh Giddey, buy low, gets better player, but he's a terrible fit next to Giddey. He is not very good. He's been in the league a really long time. There's just no reason to make this trade. You know, it's like if you think about when we traded for Josh Giddey, if Josh Giddey was 2 years older and had declined each of those 2 years, you would not want him right now, right? Like if Josh Giddey was terrible last year and then he was very poor through the start of this year, you wouldn't then be like, well, there's still upside here. And that's Jonathan Kuminga at this point. Like, he's not playing well, and it's just been enough time where, like, if this was going to hit, it probably would have hit. And Golden State desperately has needed him to hit, has tried to put him in position to hit, and it hasn't happened. Like, this is not a guy I would target. I don't even know if I would trade Vooch for Kuminga straight up. Like, to be honest, I think I would rather just not have Jonathan Kuminga on the roster. Like, I just don't want him on the roster. I just don't want him. I don't want him next year. You know, like I
don't know, Doug. I think there's enough raw talent. I'd take a flyer on
that's
it
fine.
For Vooch.
You can,
Vooch is a nothing.
I know Vooch is a nothing. Well, replace Vooch with Zach Collins or Kevin Herter or anything. I'm just telling you, if you just offer me Jonathan Kuminga for free, I'd have to really think about it. Like I don't think that's a yes for me. I think I'd rather just not have him at all. You could talk me into it. Like, I'm not saying I'm a hard no. I'm just saying there's no way I'd give up anything. And if it's just Vooch for Kuminga straight up, it's not a no-brainer to me. That's all. Like, you could probably, I wouldn't hate it if it happened. Like, I wouldn't be like, throw me off a building. We just got Jonathan Kuminga. Like, I would totally get it, but I also would not be like doing backflips and like super excited for it either. I'd be like, all right, well, we'll just see what happens. Like, it's like, that's where Kuminga is to me. He's like I don't think there's any meaningful upside here. And I'm not excited for him at, like, I don't know what he's making. It's like $24 million next year, $25 million, something like that is my off the cuff guess. Like, I'm not thrilled with it. That's all.
Okay. Finally, let's go into our last. Well, first of all, Kevin, thanks for that email. I mean, it was I forwarded to you because it's, you know, that one was significant.
Yeah, put a lot of time and put a lot of time and thought. We may not have agreed with all the points, but hey, it's always thoughtful to
great job
and check all the cap consequences of the trades, which I always appreciate that, you know, people actually check the trades are legal.
Exactly. You know, like I didn't send you any of the ones like let's trade Vooch for LeBron. For the ones I get. Okay, let's go into last segment. This is a new segment. Doug. I'm excited about this segment. What would you say just to start out? How do you judge? In your opinion, how would you judge the performance of a GM or a front office? What are the two most important factors?
I don't know if you're going to like my answer exactly. But it's always kind of like, one, do you align all of your moves together to create like an outcome? Like, are you understanding that like none of your decisions can be made in a vacuum? You have to combine them in such a way that gets to where you're trying to go. And so there's like your highest level is like strategy. And so like the piece is like, can you put together a strategy that is coherent and makes sense? And then after that, you know, there's the execution part. Like, are you able to make the correct moves that fill that strategy? And then there's luck. So the one is like, can you put together the strategy that makes sense? And then the second thing is like how well you execute. And then I look at execution, not so much in like, did you pick the miracle draft pick? Like, did you pick the perfect guy in like a group of guys, and that's hard. I look at it as if I were to take a range of choices that were reasonable at the time, like, do you pick something in that range, and how often do you pick something that is better than reasonable? Like, so as an example, looking at Patrick Williams as a draft pick, like, it was a complete failure and a bust. But I'm not so sad about that, because most of the picks you were looking at were like really bad. I think Pat was a special case of bad because of a lot of reasons. I think we talked about this last show where like he was like ranked like 30th or something in his class as a high school player. Then he had an absolute crap like freshman year, and somehow he moved up to number 4 in the draft. Like, there's no reason, like, you're number 30 amongst freshmen before. Like, how would you move up to number 4 by playing really bad? Like, made no sense. So like that one is maybe a little,
because he looks the part.
Yeah, little.
He looks like he belongs out little, there. Yeah,
well, not if you watched him play basketball.
He's 19.
But like, so that one's a little special. Maybe I'd ding him a little bit. But like generally, like if you pick a bust and like the Denzel Valentine year, and I know you love Denzel, so sorry to rip on him here. Like, I don't blame the Bulls for taking Denzel Valentine. Like, if you look at that draft, it's just like a sea of terrible players. And so it's like, okay, well, we got a bad player and a bunch of other bad players were around him. Like, almost every GM in the league was going to take a bad player there. And then, like, you know, the flip side is if you're in a great draft and you take a good player, but like everyone around you also takes a good player, like, you don't get special credit for that either, because it's just like, yeah, anyone can like grab into the bag and like grab, you know, the typical outcome. So then from an execution standpoint, it's like, how often do you get like non-typical outcomes, and how often do you, and are those non-typical good or bad? Like, are you consistently getting non-typical bad outcomes, non-typical good outcomes, or just typical outcomes? It's kind of how I gauge execution. That was probably like way too long an answer. For, I think you were looking for something real simple, like how well do you draft and how well do you make trades?
I was going to say, to me, it's more important, not necessarily trades, because trades are completely dependent also that you have a willing partner who is, you're able to also negotiate with. So it's kind of also, that is dependent on what's out there, what's available. It's, there's a lot of what does the other team, you know what I mean? That you can't control. You can't control talent evaluation. To me, that's number one by far. So that's the number one thing. And you, that's why I was always pretty high in Gar Pax. I thought they did a great job overall of drafting. You look at, you know, from when they started to Ben Gordon, you know, to Dang, Kirk Hyatt, less so. I wasn't a huge fan, but in the guys they picked up in the second round, you know, they did a really good job from Gafford all the way to the end. Every group has a miss. You know, every group does. Every GM has a miss. I don't care who it is. But overall, I mean, they were hitting at a pretty good rate.
Yeah, they didn't. You know, they
70,
didn't,
80%.
They did not have like a lot of, to what I said, they did not have had many times where like they picked the bad player in a group of good players. You know, or they always picked at least at the group level or above. And they consistently picked way above outliers. Like they had a ton of guys who were like outlier good players, you know, like over their history. And the times where they had bad
Taj
draft
Gibson,
picks.
Taj Gibson, you mean?
Yeah, Taj was one.
In Butler.
The time they had like bad players that were like below like the range, like most of the time they picked bad players, it was just in a sea of bad players where you're almost guaranteed to miss. Like, they did not like have a bunch of misses in the midst of like, oh, there was a bunch of good guys and you picked the one lousy one. Most of the time they had misses. It was just like, yeah, probably whatever you're going to do is going to be a miss. And there's some examples, like Doug McDermott is like the one that stands out. Like, you could have taken Zach LaVine instead, which would have been like way better. And you traded up for McDermott, which was also super weird. That one is like the outlier that, but their pattern overall was like really good at talent evaluation. And when they missed, they moved on from guys really quickly. Like, they got a first round pick for James Johnson. I forget what they got back for Tony Snell, but they moved him. They moved Doug McDermott. They moved on from these guys like really quickly when they realized this isn't it. Like, they didn't just like stick with them forever and then re-sign them to $80 million deals like someone else.
Eggs. 90 million. all well said. And, you know, guys like Gafford and Portis, like those weren't in, I mentioned Butler and Taj Gibson. Those are anything after 20 and you get a guy who's a really good rotation player. That's good drafting. You know, that's incredible to get a player like that. That's a Butler is one of the best picks in the last 20 years, you know? So, I mean, those guys, that's why I judge them. I think that's the most important thing. Would you agree that's the most important thing? How you evaluate talent when you pick that talent and then hopefully develop it and put those guys in position to succeed. I think they did a good job of. You can't look at this front office and say they're good at it. You just can't. You know, Io, I was sitting on my couch screaming from the take Io. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you that much credit for Io. You know, but you failed in almost there. Dalen Terry. There were other players that were picked after him, immediately after, who all have had better careers. You know, so like, and they traded away a lot of the draft capital to avoid these mistakes. Now, Modest, you know, Modest is saving their job. You know, like, but I think he, in some ways, Modest has been really overrated. I think he's going to be a good player. I don't see, you know, year after year all-star in him. There's nothing I've seen yet to indicate that to me, outside of the fact that he's got incredible athletic skills.
He's a good player.
He's got some stuff.
Yeah,
he's a good player.
To your point, though, like he was at one point, he was viewed as potential as number one in the draft, and you drafted him at 11. Like, okay, like I mean, like it was a good pick. I'm glad they made it. Like, but it's not like he was like mocked to go like 5-6 spots ahead of us. Like, how common is it a guy who's mocked to go in the top 5 to fall to 11? Like. Those guys have a really big success rate. When everyone is like, this guy should be top 5, and then they fall, those guys often have really good success rates. So, like, it's fine. Like, we took him. I'm glad we did. Like, a bunch of other teams could have and didn't, and we did. So they get some credit for that. But, again, it's kind of like the Io thing. It's, like, not a ton of credit. Like, this was not, like, a super hard.
Yeah, so it's TBD. And another point, too, there were a lot of guys in that draft that, you know, I was really big on Zach Edey. Zach Edey, we just picked a few ahead of him. Are you going to say you're willing to bet your house in 10 years you're going to look back and say who had the better career, Modest or Zach Edey? I don't know how if you think that it's definitely going to be Modest and you hadn't paid attention to what Zach Edey has done this year, because it's been some awe-inspiring stuff. But that said, well, we'll see. You know, we'll see. The it's out on that. 5 years though, you know, Patrick Williams bust galore in both rounds. So. So that's, I think, the most important thing. But the second most important thing to me is not trades. It's, are you able to negotiate good contracts, especially in this atmosphere? There's a hard cap now in the NBA. People don't realize it. It's the second apron. That's essentially what it's serving at. You cannot overpay by $1. You really have to take each contract and negotiation and get the best value that you can for your org. So I'm going to judge this front office on some of these contracts. Now, I know some of these were ones where you had to get Zach off the roster. You know what I mean? So some of these came in and they're going to be overpaid. So we're going to go through the roster now that we finally have kind of, we have a real sample size.
I can simplify this for you in like one point, because there's no reason to go through all the contracts. The only good contract they've negotiated, I mean, I shouldn't say the best contract they negotiated was Josh Giddey.
No, it was Caruso.
No, and I'm going
to... Caruso led to Josh Giddey, buddy.
Just hear me out for a second. Josh Giddey was an actual negotiation. You know, like, you had this data on him. You got him at a really good rate. He was a free agent. Alex Caruso ended up being a good contract. But, like, he was willing to take less money to go to the Lakers. Like, by default, we overpaid him. He we only got him because no one else wanted him. DeMar DeRozan was a good contract. But like his next highest offer,
it was a terrible contract.
It wasn't. It was a great contract. If we could have traded, just hear me out. But the most anyone else was going to pay him was $15 million. So like we overpaid him by a gazillion dollars to get him to come here.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, but like the contract ended up being good. Kobe White ended up being a very good contract. Io DeSumo ended up being a very good contract. But those contracts, when they were signed, they were like on the higher end of market value. Like Io DeSumo was coming off a terrible year. We were like super late in free agency. We probably could have got him at the vet minimum, whatever his qualifying offer was that year. Like no one was interested. And then he played really well the following year, and it looks like a great deal. Kobe White, like we paid probably not the, like it wasn't a bad deal. It wasn't a bad deal when we signed it, but it wasn't like a great deal either. But then Kobe White had a huge breakout year afterwards. And so if I look at like the actual context of when they signed all of their deals, the one that stands out to me is like you really did well was Josh Giddey in the context at the time. Most of the other deals, whether they ended up good or not good, was because the player ended up doing like way better than you expected after the deal or way worse than you expected after the deal. You know, like Vooch, Vooch, I think like that was just a bad signing. Like you just paid too much. It was bad. Pat Williams, like I think that was also just a really bad signing. But it became even way worse afterwards. Like you knew with Vooch exactly what you were gonna get. Like that one was just bad, and you knew it in the moment. Patrick Williams, I get why they were still hoping he was gonna be better. But it was really bad execution. There's no reason to sign early. You could have just waited. You could let him be an RFA. Like no one was gonna come after him.
You could have got him at
$10 million a year. Right. So that was like a really bad negotiation. So when I look at them as like negotiators, like I guess the most positive thing I could say is like their most recent major negotiation, they did exactly what they should have. They didn't agree. It was the first time they let a guy actually go to restricted free agency and field offers, like Kobe, Io, like everyone. I guess Io, they also let go to restricted free agency, but he was such a minor player. But all their other deals they signed prior to free agency opening, like Vooch, same thing with the extension. And they didn't actually let the market forces that would have gone in their favor help them out. And with Josh Giddey, they did. And then they played hardball, and then they waited, and then they got him on the number they wanted. And they should have been doing that with Patrick Williams. They should have been doing that with Kobe White. Even though the Kobe White contract worked out great, they should have been doing that with Kobe White. Like, and so maybe the best thing I can say is at least the most recent thing they've done, they did the right thing. But the rest of them, they did not do the right thing. They sometimes got good results because, you know, like how a contract plays out over time is totally different than how it's negotiated in the moment. Like the player is a different player the next year and the years after. And so how that player changes makes a big deal on how you view the contract. So a lot of their contracts that worked out well, they were bailed out, but their process was poor. And so Giddey was the only time they had a good process.
I disagree a little bit.
That's fine.
Fair enough. We'll run through it. We'll just quick run through it. We just want to say win, average, loss. So no, you know, tie, win, tie, loss. Josh Giddey's a win.
Yep.
No doubt. Agreed. We both agreed. Vucevic,
loss.
Huge L. No one was giving him a third year. Incredibly dumb. We called that out at the time. That's a big L. If he was on the open market this year, what do you think Vooch would make? The vet average, somebody would maybe give him
probably like $7 million.
What is that?
I think someone would pay him like backup money and get like $5 to $7 million.
Somewhere. Okay. Yeah. All right. Regardless, yeah. He's overpaid. Yeah, yeah. Zach Collins, he didn't negotiate. Doesn't matter. I did want to touch on Zach Collins. I want Zach Collins back next year. What would you pay Zach Collins?
$10 million.
I'd go a little higher than that. I like Zach Collins a lot. $15 million, I might go. All right, Patrick Williams, big F, another L. Herter, he didn't negotiate. Kobe White, I'd say, I think it's a win. You're going to say it's a tie, right? Like you can't give him an L for that negotiation.
No, I would,
because he was playing really well.
The negotiation, I would give a tie. Yeah. The contract is a huge win. You know, how it was negotiated with the context of where Kobe was at the time he negotiated was a tie. I didn't think it was a bad deal when we signed him either. I just didn't think it was a great deal. It became a great deal because Kobe White kept working on his game and became a better player.
Trey Jones is a win.
Oh, he didn't negotiate that. You're in? Oh, no, he did. Never. Sorry, the new one. I was thinking of last year's. Yeah.
3 years.
I agree. That's a win.
That's a win. Io, we got to give it a win.
Again, I view the same thing as tie in the context, but. But yeah, it became a win.
Javon Carter, massive L.
And to me, that one is a tie in the context as well. But Javon Carter became terrible afterwards. Like, I don't blame him for Javon Carter because he was a 3-and-D point guard. Like, he was shooting really well and he was playing good defense. And it was exactly what we needed. Like, in paper, this felt like a really good idea. So, I was not mad about that contract at the time. It became a huge L. So this is, to me, again, like tie that became an L rather than something at the time I thought was an L.
And then the last one we got to discuss is Julian Phillips, who they traded. They traded two second-rounders to make the second-round pick. And then they signed him to this extension, you know, at 2.2 to lock in the rate. You better be right on that. Like, this guy's taking up a roster spot. He sucks. I don't care how athletic he is. When that guy's open, there's not anybody in the same zip code, and he misses consistently from three. He's constantly giving up a backdoor. He's not a good basketball player. He's out of the league when it's done here, and you devoted years to this guy. I know it's not a lot of money, but to give up another second round, another pick, another asset, you better be right on a move like that. Big F. What say you?
I don't care about Julian Phillips. Like, I think he was a good prospect. I'm actually glad they locked him into the deal they locked him into when they signed him. Because you want that time to develop a player like that. to get like that number of years. So I think that was all executed okay. But, you know, he didn't end up panning out. I was excited for Phillips, like when we drafted him, though. I think it was a very reasonable thing to do. I think it was reasonable to give up the 2 second-round picks. So, and you could just waive him at any point during this deal, and if you decided to, and it wouldn't matter. Like, you could just eat the cost and then get that roster spot back if you need to, because the price is so low, right? And then if he pans out, now you've got this incredible deal on this low price. So I think that was all executed fine. You know, it's like a really, really minor transaction, but I have no problems with it. I think it hasn't worked out. You know, again, to my point, like, it didn't work out in the long run, but this is the type of risk I would take in that position and the type of, in the way I would take it. Like, I would, if they did that same thing again, I would be totally fine with, hey, sign your second rounder for 4 years or whatever, get them locked in on a cheap price if you feel they're a high upside guy. And then you've got this guy in a good contract if you're right. And if you're wrong, like, all right, it's $2 million on the cap to waive the guy. Who cares?
What about the Jalen Smith contract?
I mean, I thought that was a tie, maybe a win at the time. And to be honest, I still think it's a tie or a win. Like, the problem is just Donovan. Like, I mean, every year Jalen Smith's been here, I'm like, just play this dude more. Like, why do we not play this guy more? Like, I'm just screaming to play him more, like, all the time. I get that he does some boneheaded stuff out there, but, like, consistently seems to help the team win when he gets chances. Just a much better interior defender than Vooch, even with his, like, boneheaded missed rotations. Like, he actually can deter a shot at the rim occasionally. And, you know, his shooting hasn't panned out how he hoped, but he still is able to get points. Like, he's rebounds, he produces. But I think the biggest thing is he just defends better than Vooch. And that just, he's more athletic, and that just makes a much bigger difference than the fact that I think Vooch is smarter and is in the right place more. But, you know, just Smith being more, way more athletic just helps you more than that. Like, I get that it's frustrating. It's like one of these things. I don't know if we talked about this or if this is somewhere else, but I was like, I think coaches often penalize guys who frustrate them a lot more than they penalize guys who don't frustrate them but are bad. And I think that's like where
that's a great call. Like
really,
yeah, absolutely.
His play is a lot because he's not frustrating. Like, he's always doing the right thing. He's just not good enough at it. And like, Smith is not always doing the right thing. And as a coach, you're just like, gotta be just like gritting your teeth. Like, why the hell don't you listen to me? And so
like, that's well said. And you're think, absolutely right on
but
that.
But it's like Jalen Smith's impact is just better. And you have to, I think as a coach, like a really good coach, you have to like look at this and be like, all right, I know this guy is frustrating, but he's helping me win and I need to play him. But then I'm sure it's also hard because now, like, look, I'm not a head coach, but then I'm sure it's like, then it creates accountability issues because now like other guys are like, well, this guy's not doing the right thing and he's still getting minutes. Why am I going to do the right thing now? So I'm sure that's like a tricky balancing act and really hard. Like, I don't think it's a, you know, but that's whatever. You're getting paid millions of dollars. You got to deal with hard things.
DT, on that note, we got to bring it in. Great, great comments today. Really always enjoy talking to you, my friend. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and your family and to all listeners of the Big Red Bus. I can't thank you enough for, you know, continuing to listen to us talk Bulls basketball. And please give us positive. If we bring any mirth to your day, please give us positive ratings on whatever platform that you listen to. I'm told that's good stuff. Some big news coming in the next couple of weeks about the BRB. But on that note, wow.
Big news. I don't even know the big news. This is crazy.
Well, yeah, I'll share it with you after this discussion.
Am I going to be involved in the big news? Every time there's like big news, you like, are. It's just like you interviewing someone and I'm not even on the show. So like, you're going to bring in like Michael Jordan one day and then like, I'm not even going to be on there. You're going to be like, nah, we're not bringing Doug on for this one.
For those who don't know, DT is a captive industry. He's a wealthy industrialist. And so he's not available Tuesdays.
I do give Thursdays. You a hard time. Yeah. I can almost never make it. It's so hard. It's a so miracle whenever we record a show.
To ask.
No, I know. I give you a hard time. All right. Can we do a Go Bears? Because Bears Packers tonight. We're recording Saturday morning. Not sure when this will get posted, but Go Bears. Let's kick the Packers ass. I really hope so. I'm so excited for this Bears season.
They are. They're going to do it.
Let's hope for it.
It's been awesome. Yeah. Exactly. And nothing was better. To me, like last week was a typical going in that game. I was saying any typical Bears team would lose that game. You know, it's a trap game. You're looking ahead to the Packers and they lose to the Browns and they just went out and just kicked their rear ends all over that field. It was one of the most glorious things I've ever seen outside of the bus we're currently in. I can't wait for tonight, man. I cannot wait. It's going to be awesome.
You know what I was insane going into that Browns game? It's like, I was arguing with people. They're like, oh, we're going to lose. This is going to be a tough game. This is a big game. And I just said, we're not going to lose. We're going to kick the Browns' ass. This is not a big game. We are going to stomp them, and then we're going to move on to the Packers. And that's because our head coach is like awesome. Like, he's awesome. There was not even a teeny bit of doubt in my mind. I was like, we are going to just stomp the Browns. I don't even know why you're talking about this game. And like, I agree with you. Like, there's no other Bears. I can't remember the last time I watched a Bears team and felt that way. We're like, they're just going to go out and do what they're supposed to do. So this is a big game tonight. I don't know that they're going to win. It's going to be close. Like, this is a 50-50, but I'm excited to watch it. And like, I'm hopeful. So, you know, go Bears.
Yeah. Amen. All right, DT, on that, let's go Bulls. Let's not forget about Bulls. Let's go Bulls.
Go Bulls. We'll give them
Go Bulls, and we'll talk again soon, my friend. All right, buddy. Bye.